We're here at the PA in the bike room, the chapter and verse writing group, which meets here every Thursday afternoon. We're ready to rock and roll.
Okay, so last night, Alex and I went to Tea Tree Gully separately to be part of the Tea Tree Gully
Writers' Festival
and the War Poetry section of the Writers' Festival. So we were there. It was happening at the Tea Tree Gully Library, which is a great library for writers and a great library for readers. I always like being there. Been to many launches and other events happening there. So members of the Northeastern Writers, some of them wrote war poetry, which was read, and we also had war poetry from your well-known war poets of through the ages.
Dick Ferret Sassoon.
And Wilfred Owen.
Wilfred Owen, of course.
I read a book about them both when I was flying over to Vietnam, an account of the time they were both in the same hospital for patients with shell shock.
Yeah.
They met in the... Yeah, it was...
Amazing times.
And others like Kenneth Slessor.
Yeah, for sure. That's probably what I was trying to think of.
Oh, yes.
So I had some... And no, most people read other poets' writings, which was an interesting experience, I'm sure, for everybody. There was one poet who read her own poetry, but she's really clever and she doesn't have to have a piece of paper to read off. She learns her own poetry. She's a very gifted learner of poetry and she goes around to lots and lots of groups and reads poetry, her own poetry to them, and she's very good at rhyming poetry.
What was her experience in the war?
She's Irish. She was in Ireland as a young child during World War II. One of her pals was not really, really funny.
They were not involved in the war.
No, they were neutral.
They were neutral.
Yes.
There were plenty of planes flying overhead.
Oh, yeah. They were close enough. They would have been.
Yeah.
Okay. Episodes of bombing.
Yeah.
All right.
It wasn't as nice and friendly as it was in Australia.
Well, it wasn't nice and friendly everywhere in Australia depending on where you are.
War is not a nice and friendly thing. But
in fact, they covered up their death toll in Darwin. It was much huger than was known at the time.
Don't tell. They'll come and see you. Asia will be on too.
I think it's been revealed, it's been admitted now. But they did the same with Gallipoli. I found out they didn't tell in the press. They didn't release the death notices all at once. They did it gradually.
Yeah.
Because I was reading diaries actually while I was sitting drinking coffee in the Vossel on Tuesday morning, sorry, about the attack on the neck, Gallipoli, and it's just a complete mess. There was a suicide mission, basically.
It's not good.
No.
Not a good subject.
No.
But anyway, it was a good night. Alex read well, I read well, everybody read well. And it's not a fun thing to be talking about. But
it's something that has to be talked about.
Yeah, and it's no good saying all the glory and everything. The boys were they're gorgeous and wonderful, but it's not about that.
When they were in the trenches covered in lice and filthy, and there was nothing glorious about it. It was horrible. The reality is, and that's why I think Wilfred Owen particularly really conveys that.
The poem that I read, Arms and the Boy, is about the tools that are used by the soldier and referring to the young boy who's pretty well his first manly thing is to go along to war. So, he's got his weapon and but he wasn't meant for these sorts of things. So, he's just an innocent, pure person. Yeah, just a young person, and he doesn't deserve this. He's not meant for this. It's not his nature for this. And all those sorts of things. I think about my own son. He's now 22.
And perhaps those things were also echoed as far as some of the other parts. Certainly Fred Smith, who was the diplomat, who is a diplomat, in Canberra, who has done several tours of duty in Afghanistan, and the information there was certainly very contemporary and looked at the modern aspects of warfare as much as we have a look at World War One as well.
Yeah. And I had World War One poem, World War Two poem, and a poem from one of Fred Smith's from later on.
We were talking to a person on Saturday at the Rotary Fair who was connected with the Light Horse Association. He was saying that the uniforms they have from that time don't fit any of them. He said they were very little men back then. They were much smaller. And I was just wondering later on if it was because a lot of them were perhaps too young to even be at war.
Well, a lot were.
Possibly, but also we are so overnourished these days. Mm. I mean, you know, really.
Well, I think also people grow up faster than they did. So they were probably, a lot of them would have been still growing.
Yeah.
Well, and a lot enlisted under 18.
Yes.
Too. But yes, also there was the overnourishment.
We're very malnourished. You don't... Yeah. And you look at Asian people these days and they tend to be growing the taller. It's because they're eating better and it makes a difference because it means if you eat well, then your body can form at its highest rates. Whereas if you're not eating really well, good food, nutritionally, then you're not ever going to get to your
best. I wonder how good the food we are eating is, despite all that.
I love what we're eating.
So much of it is spending. Well, no, but it's... Even you buy vegetables at the supermarket, they've spent weeks getting from the ground to the shelf. They've lost so many nutrients. When my grandparents grew all their own veggies, they ate it straight from the garden. So, and given that back then they had to eat vegetables.
So they should have been growing taller then.
Yes, I think, should have been growing taller then. I know.
Did you have another poem there you wanted to read?
Well, I was looking at this one, which came to light. They found it. It's a Shelley poem.
How long ago did he die?
About 200 years.
That's what I
thought. They found this in 2008.
Yeah.
And it was just made... And I think probably they actually put it out for Remembrance Day because it is a very strong anti-war poem. Now, I haven't read it. It's about 10 pages. Cause
Yeah.
If you can see, I've got it here. It's not easy print to read.
Well, do your best.
Yeah, but I wrote it down because it'll be easier. So I only got the first and last verse at the stage. It's faintly borne the stifled rail of death, millions to fight compelled to fight or die, in mangled heaps on war's red altar lie. The sternly wise, the mildly good have sped to the unfruitful mansions of the dead. And ends up on a brighter note. Oppressive law no more shall power retain. Peace, love, and concord shall rule again, and heal the anguish of a suffering world. Then shall things which now confusedly hurled seem thus be resolved, to order's sway, and error's night be turned to virtue's day.
Oh.
And that's sort of along the same lines of this war to end all.
He's arguing that it's governments to blame for wars, and if people, democracy will basically, a great democracy will put an end to wars. It was a lovely thought. History hasn't proven him right.
You're not going to find peace with weapons.
No.
And while people are making lots of, happily, we're going to get here. While people are making lots of money with weaponry,
yes.
It's not going to end.
It is. Profit.
Onset of drones and...
drones, that's frightening.
AI, it's similar situations. Maybe it might be their machines versus our machines in some time in the future rather than man-on-man combat.
Well, really, World War One wasn't run by the men in the trenches.
Hmm.
It wasn't. It was run partly by the blockade of Germany... But Germany's economy crumpled first. It was the country whose economy could sustain the war longest that run. And it wasn't run by the men in the trenches. All that human life that was lost in World War One was pointless because it achieved absolutely nothing. The blockade of Germany did cripple them economically. But all that war of attrition really, in the end, is... And Samuel, it was who could supply... the weapons faster and the tanks faster. They could have done away with the men altogether and just had the the weapons fighting at each other and not had the men there. The human life.
Send the robots somewhere far, far, far away and let them
fight it out in another out in space somewhere.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Doctor Who had the solution.
Here we go. Doctor Who.
They had two boxes.
Oh, I saw that.
Well, tell the rest of us who didn't.
Okay. They had one of the boxes would destroy this entire race of people and the other would do no harm. But in fact, it was a bluff and they were both harmless. There was nothing in either of them.
Oh, I see.
Yes. But having that belief that, you know, that was there was enough to make them...
Well, it's like a nuclear threat. That kept everybody quiet and settled because we were worried that the nukes were going to ruin us all.
But it's only so long before somebody says, well, I don't care, I'm going to press that button. That's the trouble with using weapon as a deterrent. It does get used.
Yes.
It's a dangerous form of deterrent.
Of which was summarised quite nicely, thank you very much, in... the 1983 episode of War Games, the movie where they had a computer named Whopper basically looking at the different scenarios as far as nuclear war is concerned, and the problem was solved by a simple game of noughts and crosses where there can be no winner. So therefore they went through all the scenarios of other games and the fact that there could be no winner and thus with nuclear warfare.
Yes, no, there's no winners. Yes.
Because like if you set off nuclear weapons, you're destroying at least parts of the world. And at the moment, we can't live anywhere else. The world is our world, and that's it. Spaceships won't be able to take enough people to... I don't know. What are we going to do?
Look after this planet of ours better.
That's a fine idea, yes.
I'm just wondering what's the role of poetry about war? Because I read the anthology about war poems, and most of them brought home the brutality of war. So I'm just thinking that can be fairly depressing, but there's a theme, but there were a few other poems that I read that were more positive, if you can be positive about war, mainly focusing on the individual, like an old soldier returned from the war.
But how many returned soldiers are never going damaged. To be...
I had a friend, and he'd been in Malaysia during an insurgency there on an undercover mission. We think, he was still a bit secretive because he was under oath not to talk about it, so he couldn't talk too much about where he'd been. But he said the real victims were the survivors, the dead are the lucky, because they carry so much psychological, physical damage all their lives, and psychological... Well, my uncle was still having nightmares the rest of his life about what he experienced, and he hadn't left Australia.
So does the writing of the war poem help the poet himself than other people?
I think it was a way of... I mean, there's nothing stronger than Wilfred Owen's, my friend, would you tell to children...
I mean, he was so young.
Yes, he was. He was only a boy himself.
He'd like lived to be 25 or something like that. It's awful. And he was such a fine poet and presumably a fine man as well. I'm not saying all poets are wonderful because, well, we all are in this room.
But, of course, we are.
I know some are a bit dodgy.
Siegfried Sassoon was apparently quite a character, not necessarily...
I guess, Jeff, it helps people who've never been to war to get an insight, like somebody like me who's been totally sheltered from anything like that. I can't even begin to imagine.
Yesterday was Remembrance Day, and I was at home and I had the radio on, ABC radio on, and they... paused at 11 o'clock and they had the winner, the Victoria Cross winner, Corporal Ben Robert Smith, I think his name. He read the ode, which is from a poem by, I believe, by Lawrence Binyon.
Mm-hmm.
It's a couple of only a few lines from Lauren Spinion's poem.
Yes.
So that's played a remarkable role because it's those lines are read at every such occasion. Anzac Day, Remembrance Day, any occasion of remembrance, those lines are read. So that was a very powerful words that he wrote.
Yeah. Mm. I taught that poem. I taught them the first verse. This was 9 and 10 year olds, my first year out teaching, and the boys really liked that poem, and to my amazement some of them learnt it by heart, because it starts off, they went with songs to the battle, and talks about them, I can't remember it all, but being steady and aglow, they died with their faces to the foe. They liked that line, that they were brave, they didn't turn and run away. And that really appealed to them. And it amazed me that, to get a reception like that from young boys.
You don't worry about how much it appeals to them. And
well, they just liked it. They understood it, I think. They understood it in their own way.
Take it out to the footy field and
It wasn't like that. The war is endless, going on and on, never stopping. The fearless foe, never faltering, constantly firing. The deadly guns, the horrible screams, the constant shouts. I am scarred by the constant visions and the painful wounds. At the age of 16, I was too young to drink, let alone fight. There is still a war, but it's hiding inside me. Yet soon it will end. I'm now 103. I can feel the end coming, creeping from within. The end is here now of the war that's inside me. It breathes its last, as do I. So that was in year 9.
Wow.
That stayed with them all their life.
I was impressed.
Angus wrote that
when he was in year 9.
That's a clever little pumpkin, that one.
That is very,
must be yours,
very good.
Yeah, I think he got a very good mark for it.
I think he should have got a good. I would have given him an A+. No worries.
Yeah, I think he did. But just, I was impressed that he could, at that age, have that understanding of how it would impress, always be there in the back of the mind.
Yeah,
I have to apologise to reading that out. No, I was threatened I would.
I have a poem that was read last night.
Okay,
let's hear it.
Okay, war does not determine who is right, only who is left. The victor declares in glory, the winner shares the spoils. Civilians caught in shrapnel, the drones patrol the sky. Soldiers in administration blocks, half a world away. The fairer sex embroiled in the affairs of modern men. Homes bombed and rubble left, still to live in the war-torn chaos. The way that it always was, battles for territory and resources, the spoils won for those who survive. Two tribes battle until one surrenders, home and country become the war zone. Arguments who will lead, who will follow. I am man, I am right, but women know another way.
Yep, fine by Alex, thank you.
Yeah.
And I love the title, it's a great title. Sometimes
what was the title again?
War does not determine who is right, only who is left.
Oh, that was the title.
Yes. Yeah. So some people
thought it was the first line of the poem, actually.
Some people are scared of titles, and they just want a really boring title, but you can add something really interesting with a title like that.
The title's important. What did Angus call his?
The Last Anzac.
Right, yeah.
Okay, that's probably a fine note to leave this on, this discussion.
I hope you have enjoyed this Remembrance Day episode of Chapter and Verse.
Yes.